bringing you key insights, tips, and advice from the brightest minds in the Canadian franchise industry, this is the Franchise Canada Chats podcast. I'm Gary Prenevost, your host of the Franchise Canada Chats podcast, where we take you into the world of franchising. Season 7 of Franchise Canada Chats will feature interviews with franchisees, franchisors, and industry leaders sharing key insights and expert advice on navigating challenges on their path to success. Franchise Canada Chats is brought to you by Frannet, Canada's franchise matchmaking experts. At Frannet, we help you to build your optimum business model. Then we introduce you to well-suited franchise options. Then, most importantly, we coach you through all aspects of your research so that you can arrive at an informed and defensible yes or no decision. Hello, everyone in Franchise Canada land. This is Gary Prenevost, president of Frannet of Southern Ontario and author of the just-released book, The Unstoppable Franchisee. It's my pleasure to welcome today's guests, Florence Gavin Rossovic, co-founder of Fuzz Wax Bar, and Don Flowers, a multi-unit franchisee with Fuzz. We're going to talk to them today about the growth of the beauty industry and how there's a path for women to leave the frustrations and limitations of the corporate world behind through franchise ownership. So let's get into things. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Let's start, Florence, with you. Maybe take a couple of minutes. Tell us a little bit about the background, your background, and how the concept of Fuzz Wax Bar came together.
Sure. So I'll give you the short version because, you know, there's a very cute long version of this. But basically, I'm from France originally. I came to Canada in 2010. Just looking for a bit of a change and a career change. The short of the long is that very quickly I met with Jesse. We randomly met in a vintage store. We became friends. It's very, very strange how all that happened. But basically, we started talking pretty quickly on about, you know, waxing and the beauty industry, and as girls do when they kind of, you know, meet each other. And I asked her where to get a wax in the city. And very, very strangely to me, she could not really tell me where. So she'd been waxing for years and going to different places, very expensive, a little dodgy. So she didn't have a reference for me. And to me, that was very odd because I knew of a concept in Europe where I was a member of where, you know, it was a no-brainer to go for waxing and very easy and very cheap and affordable. So I tell her about this concept and I say, you know, that's very odd in like the fifth largest city in North America that you guys don't know where to go for a wax. And we start talking more and more about this, and we quickly realized there was a huge opportunity for a business. Neither of us were in business or in the beauty industry at the time. She was in PR events. She was young, 25, 26 years old. I was a little bit older, but in the movie industry, nothing to do with that. And then, you know, we thought, why not? Why not bring something to the city? There's a huge opportunity. Nobody's doing it. When does that ever happen? Like, it's strange, right? So we did a lot of market research. We took our time, which is generally what we do in this business, if you know us. Really wanted to do this well. So we took about 8 months, sat down every day, and came up with a plan. Came up with a tiny, tiny bit of money because nobody at the time would look at us. And, you know, things haven't changed that much, unfortunately, for young female entrepreneurs. Maybe a little bit, but at least 10 years ago, it was impossible to get anybody to look at us. And we just opened, you know, our first store in 2012, with a lot of hard work, some luck, and a really good brand and a really good concept. So that worked out really well from there.
And then from there, do you tell us a little bit about how it evolved into the franchise model, please?
Yeah. So franchising was, a little bit on our radar to start. We always knew we wanted to do this on a large scale. So it was never going to be just this one thing. A very ambitious young woman. But we thought about franchising right off the get-go because it's obviously a way to grow a little bit faster. And also we knew we didn't know enough about things. So we weren't from the business world, not from the, you know, aesthetics world. So it's always great to be able to also have a community of entrepreneurs and people to grow with you. We didn't do that right away. We started with building 3-4 corporate stores because we needed some, you know, validation of the concept, which we got really quickly. And then after that, about, you know, in 2015, we thought, let's just do it. Let's just bring on the franchise world and see what that looks like. And to our surprise, we realized that franchising is a whole different business. And it's a very different ball game, and it's very pricey, and it takes a lot of resources and knowledge. So again, we stopped, we took our time. But in that time of processing what franchising was, we met Don. And Don was actually somebody that Jesse knew from previous work experience. And Don was looking for a job. And she came to be a manager at one of our location and very, very quickly realized there was something there more. And we were talking about franchising, and I mean, I'll let Dawn explain later, but she became our first franchisee, basically. So that's how we got into the world of franchising and how we took it, you know, from, you know, one franchisee, Dawn, in 2015 to now 9 franchisees today.
Okay, so I'm going to come back to the comment that you made about a whole different world of franchising is a very different business than the actual business that you started with. But I'll come back. Don, I'd love to hear your perspective. So you started as a manager. What inspired you to move from manager to franchisee and then to multi-unit, please?
Yeah, so I was in the corporate world, and I had actually gone to their first stores grand open party. And I thought they were insane. I was like, how are you guys even going to pay for rent with waxing? Like, I didn't understand it. And then I went to their grand open party and I was like, oh, this is good. I think I want to learn more about this business. So yeah, I was like, I knew nothing about the, you know, this industry. So I asked, you know, are you guys hiring? I'd love to learn more. So I was, my plan was to manage one of their busiest stores for 1 year to fully decide if this is, you know, the route I wanted to go. And I think I was 6 months in, I was pregnant and I was like, okay, you've completely made up my mind. I want to do this, now. So it happened a lot quicker than, I think everyone was kind of expecting. So yeah, we started looking for our first location.
Okay, so let me get this right. You were 6 months, or no, you were managing for 6 months and you were pregnant. Usually a lot of women say, okay, let me get my child at least the first couple of years foundation and then I'll go back. So that in itself is a great story.
I'm impatient. Bottom line, very impatient. I knew it was good, like, and I just wanted in ASAP.
And so being first franchisee, that took a certain amount of courage. So you saw it from the inside, you saw how it worked.
Yeah.
So that's extra knowledge that a lot of people. So one of the things that I'll come to later is the advice you have for prospective franchisees, but I'd like to hear more of the story before we get there.
So it was a big risk for me, but I kind of had an upper hand there because I did know Jesse. And I was getting to know Florence. So I knew their hearts. They were in this for the right reasons. And our values aligned from day one. So I had a little bit of an advantage. And I felt like it was something that I wanted to be a part of, like helping them too, right? Like me being their first franchisee and me being a franchisee for the first time, like they would have a little bit of patience with me, I was hoping. And we kind of worked together to get there and it worked out well.
And what were, you said you're from corporate. What was your background before coming to this?
I worked at a modeling agency for over a decade, right out of high school.
And organizing and what aspects of that?
I was a school director.
Okay.
Yeah.
So lots of corporate transferable skills that you could apply into this business.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start your first unit and then you grew. So tell us about the growth, please.
Yeah. The growth happened very quickly. Everyone was a little bit unsure. I live in Whitby, Ontario, and Whitby is a very small town. And in that first year, I remember we were in a plaza and the plaza was almost empty. And within that first year, we had so much growth even within that plaza. And I, you know, everyone started moving out east a little bit more. It was more affordable. And I think we were in the positive by year two, which was phenomenal. Like, I remember Flo being like so excited about the growth of Whippy and how.
Yeah, I think Dunn was actually in the positive around like month 7 or 8. So much faster. Yeah.
It did happen very, very quickly, very unexpectedly. I remember like the first couple of weeks we were open, I was like 8 months pregnant. And I was like napping on the beds in between clients because we would have a client in the morning and a client in the evening. And I was there open to close. And I was like so nervous. And Flo and Jesse were like, just wait, this is going to happen. Like, this is going to happen for you. And then, yeah, very quickly we were booked. And I was like, this is working.
Okay. And then you grew that. And you, when did you become a multi-unit owner?
Yeah, I think it was the year two when I had decided that I wanted a second location. That took a little while to find that location. So I believe it was year three that we opened the Ajax location. And same thing, Ajax location was doing very well, very quickly. I was nervous because Whippy and Ajax are not too far apart, but I've seen it be successful at the Toronto locations. So I was like, okay, we're doing this. And then COVID happened. So that kind of set us back a little bit. But then everything opened up again and people were literally lining up at the door. And I was like, that was kind of like it for me. I was like, okay, this is, people want this.
So I don't want to spend too much time on the pandemic element, but I think it's important to understand. So all retail or almost all retail was locked down. People lined up as soon as the lockdowns were removed and you filled the calendar again? Okay.
We were short a little bit, obviously people, you know, not fully comfortable, but yeah, we were busy again. And okay. it was feeling a little normal. And then now, you know, it's gone. No one talks about it anymore.
Florence, one of the elements of your model is the membership base. So I think that helps with what you talked about people coming back, Dawn. But I want to, Florence, can you just fill us in a little bit about the membership-based model, please, and how it applies?
Yeah, sure. And I mean, for the pandemic, what a savior. We basically closed our stores, you know, in March 2020 with about 10,000 members altogether. And when we reopened, we had 8,000 people paying on day one. So, you know, that's something that you can't really do anywhere else. Like that predictability of revenue is amazing. And the fact that we only lost 20% of people then, and a lot of them came back eventually, but even just 20% when a lot of other retailers probably lost, you know, 70-80% of their people, like this stability, you know, is why it works and why franchisees understand the model very fast. But for us, the membership model was a no-brainer because we build this business as a client-centric model. So we always thought, you know, I'm a client of this industry. I'm making this business because I'm not finding what I want. What do I want as a client? And a membership was such an easy, you know, idea because waxing is not something that you kind of want to forget that you need to go for a wax. You know, you kind of push it. Like, I don't really want to do this month. But if you pay a membership, you know, you get a reminder, you're paying in, you're going to go. And that's kind of, as a client, what you need to get this done because you want it eventually, you just kind of push it. So it made sense for us. And as a business, obviously, it's an amazing incentive for new franchise partners to come on. They understand what the predictability of their business is going to be, what the growth can be for a multi-unit owner. It's amazing. You can tell, you know, I'm going to have this amount of members. That's my base by month 6. And then by month 9, I can think about my second location because I know exactly how much revenue I'm going to get in the bank.
Okay. And the membership-based model specifically for your brand. So somebody comes in and they're looking at, why should I come to you? Tell our listeners a little bit about the value proposition, please.
Sure. So, and it's funny because it's not changed since day one. So I think we kind of nailed it on day one. But basically we have 3 tiers of memberships. We, you know, we have one that's just a kind of a loyal customer that's going to come in, but not necessarily every month. So they want to get a discount on prices. So they pay a, you know, fairly small fee monthly, and then they can come and do services for member pricing. And then we have the first faithful, which is our biggest seller. So that's one service per month. So you pay a fee and you get one service of your choice per month. And then there's a bunch of other perks. And then the Fanatic, which is for the big waxers, which was me as a client. That's the membership I wanted. So it's three services per month that you get for a fee. And then you get a free birthday wax, and then you get discounts on retail and a bunch of member perks, and you're part of a community. So that's how that works.
Okay. And what percentage is women versus men customers on average?
You know, we have a huge amount of male members and male clients in general, and we built our brand around this unisex concept to start. And we've improved on the unisex and gender neutral elements of our brand over the years. So we're fully gender neutral now, which really attracts a lot of male clients. So it's around the 15% of male, and we see it in some demographics from some regions more than others, which is interesting, but in Montreal, for example, we're probably closer to the 20% because they don't have another place to go to. In some of the suburbs, same thing. You know, we have a bigger male clientele because that we're their only option.
Interesting. Okay. So back to you, Dawn. Thank you for that, Florence. Back to you, Dawn. What Florence was just talking about, you've got the membership base up. You've got the predictability of growth. Now you're opening multiple units. And I think you're up to three units now.
To three right now.
And how do you manage, you know, between your time and the focus between the different centers?
Having great staff, having great management at each store is key at this point for me. And it makes it easier because everything is the exact same across the board. All the stores are the same. So you know, I have a management chat and I'm posting one time in the management chat on an update or something, and all stores do it. Being a franchise kind of takes a lot of the work out for you.
Can you expand on that, please?
Yeah, so when I first opened, I was, you know, I was young and I was eager, and to be honest, a little disappointed in the lack of, I guess, creativity. I had all these ideas, and it's a franchise. It's not going to work. But now I appreciate that more than ever because I don't have time to be creative or think of things. I'll get an email from head office and they're like, next week we're going to start this. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. Again, there was no thought on my part behind it. I just have to implement it in my stores.
I think it was Ray Kroc, one of the grandfathers of franchising, said, none of us is as smart as all of us, or something close to that. Mm-hmm. So it's the strength of accessing that intellectual brain trust at the franchise system, and you and the other franchisees, as well as the franchisor.
Yeah.
Which of your stores is the top performing store?
Whitby, my first store. It's definitely my baby. That's the one that I was, you know, there, open to close, very pregnant. I got to know my community very well, and I still know them very well to date. So it's definitely Whippy, but Ajax is coming in hot now. We're three or four years now, Flo.
I mean, with the pandemic, I don't know,
I think 3 years for Ajax. And yeah, Ajax is slowly catching up to Whippy for sure.
Do you have that friendly competition, manager to manager?
1,000%. Yeah.
Some of the interviewees of my book, they had 15, 30, in one case, over 80 locations, and that fun interdependence, but also that friendly competition. I mean, if they can do it, look what we can do in motivating the team. Let's transition a little bit more broad, and let's talk about the beauty industry. One of my favorite industries. It's one of those really in demand businesses that continues to grow despite what the economic conditions are. And I see the poster behind you. It's got the something by the eye patch. So for our listeners, what I want to talk about is you're not solely focused on waxing. What do you guys do to stand out in the beauty space?
Sure. So for us, Fuzz has always been more than just a waxing bar. you know, we've always prided ourselves on having this community and this education background. And so we've always looked to be the experts. We want to be the experts for everything waxing, hair removal, skin. So that's what we offer to our clients. We will bring on things that make sense to us. Our product, our retail is very purpose driven. So we only sell things that are around the waxing and hair removal industry, but we're going to bring the best things. And we're going to, you know, train our staff to understand what that is so they can properly sell it to clients. And we always are around the education more than the sales. Same for the, so you're saying the Skin Iceland that's behind Dawn right now. This is something that we brought on because it makes complete sense for us. Hydrating the skin is something we talk about all the time. It just makes sense with waxing. It prepares the skin for waxing better. So these little patches are great for hydrating the skin, but they're also great to, you know, have a relaxation moment when you're in the cabin getting waxed. So we kind of mix that, again, things that make sense for us. We have a facial service, V&P Facial, which we brought on because it is treating an area that you can't really get treated anywhere else. So when people have these issues in these intimate areas, they can't really get help anywhere. And there's this taboo around, you know, private parts having issues that you can't go to a doctor, you can't go to really a dermatologist or anywhere else. So we're here for that. We've always been so open door, so, you know, removing the taboo. People walk in the door and say, I want to get a Brazilian done. It's loud, it's clear, we're not shushing anybody. So we're offering services for these people that, you know, need help and can't get it anywhere else.
Enjoying the episode so far? Franchise Canada also has bi-monthly newsletters full of franchise opportunities. With Franchise Canada e-news, new content gets sent directly to your inbox, and you can keep up to date on the newest episodes of the Franchise Canada Chats podcast that you're listening to right now. Plus, you get a free subscription to Franchise Canada magazine. Join the 19,000 fellow franchisees, industry leaders, and aspiring entrepreneurs by subscribing at franchisecanada.online. Now, back to the episode.
So expand on that answer, just tying it to what you said earlier. It's an entirely different business running a franchise compared to running your own store. So how does that franchise leadership around the solution suite, just tie that those two together, how you broaden the offering?
Well, so what's interesting with, you know, being such a niche concept is that you bring on people that understand why we're doing such niche things. So when we bring on franchisees, we're very clear, you know, you're only going to get to offer hair removal. Now we can broaden certain things. We can offer threading. We can offer, you know, we'll look at technology. We're a young and modern brand. So yes, there will be some things that, you know, we're going to bring on, but we're not going to do nails. We're not going to do hair. We're not going to do all this. So it's very clear from the beginning. And, you know, they see the model, they understand that works, and they see how much we've expended, so they buy into that. But of course, you know, people have ideas, and Dawn has a million ideas, and that's amazing. We actually ask for that, and they come in, and they're like, oh, how can we bring this, and can we do this? And if it ties into what we do, 100% we can. I'll tell you that we'll take our time, because we want to make sure it's fine, and it works, and it's worth it. But we're experimenting a couple things, like, you know, Dawn has some brightening services that she's offering in her Vancouver location right now. We're not offering that anywhere else. We're testing it out. But there's things like that, that you have to be open, you know, to bring on more things and more revenue streams for franchisees, but you have to stay clear and, you know, on your path. And that only works if you've been very clear with your franchisees when you brought them on about what the path is.
Okay. And I just heard something really neat. I think you said Vancouver. Dawn, you have Whitby, Ajax, and Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay. So that number one, that's awesome. It's also rare that you're multi-unit and multi-city when the support is so far away. So kudos to the strength of the model that allows that. Mm-hmm. You've already talked about the strength of manager. So we don't have time to get into that more, but for the listeners, that you should pay attention to that they can support that distant performance on multi-unit. That's exciting. I'd like to hear from both of you, and I'll start with you, Dawn. Tell us a little bit about why you chose the path of franchise ownership over staying in corporate. And speak to it from the woman's perspective, please, because I have a lot of clients who are saying, glass ceiling, or we're not treated the same, salary differentiation, all those different elements. Expand on that.
I have a family, and I was over the 9 to 5, I was commuting to Toronto. I tried driving. I tried the GO train. I tried carpooling. It was literally exhausting. I know I wanted to do something on my own, but I wanted something a little more proven. That, again, because I have a family, that wasn't going to take up, you know, 100% of my time. Which was why franchising was so perfect for me, because there's head office. They've done all the legwork. They have the numbers to show you that this works. So that was comforting for me, because I didn't have a lot. It's not like I had all this spare money, that I was, you know, willing to try something and risk it. Like I couldn't risk it. I had to be 100% positive. And this model was very convincing. And it still is to date, which is why I'm continuing. I wouldn't continue if it wasn't working.
So what are the main elements of, now you're several years in and you look back to, you know, corporate path, I would have been here and now look what I've got. Tell us a little bit about both the tangible and the intangible, like what's exciting for you?
Exciting for me is, I love to create local opportunities. That's important for me, in my different communities now. That's super important for me. And I just love not, like, if I don't want to go in, I don't have to go in. I go in because I enjoy going in. But I can not if I don't want to, or I can take a vacation without booking time off with anybody. I am free to, you know, and this is big for women, drive my kids to school in the morning and pick them up. And I have a lot of staff now that work for me that will start at 9:15, 9:30. I take a loss there too, because we really should have them in at 8 a.m., but they're parents. So I get that. And I want to have that flexibility for parents. So I enjoy those things as well.
Okay. So I'm hearing a lot more control over your schedule, obviously the wealth creation and the excitement of there, but I also hear empowering other people, giving other people that flexibility as well. And Florence, now I'd like to hear from your perspective on it, from corporate to now you've got the franchise system. And I think specifically, let's talk about what you do for your franchisees and what can it give them.
Sure. So when we went from corporate to franchise, we realized, you know, we had a bunch of systems and operations and we knew what worked, but we kind of knew in our head. And we also were very much on the floor. We had a district manager, but Jesse and I were just walking around all the locations. So we really had to sit down, write manuals, write all these things that, you know, take what is working in our system, and how do we teach people how to make that work the same? And that's something that I, you know, talk to franchisees, because I do the onboarding for them, you know, the sales for that. I always, you know, tell them there's one very important aspect of franchising is you're buying into a system, and you can say, sure, I understand, I'm signing a contract, I get it. But people don't really understand what that means until they're in it. What that really means is that you should trust, if you have a good system, or you're entering a good system, that when they tell you, you know, your performance is not quite there, we can help you. They can actually help you. So it's taking that, you know, expertise, that knowledge, those manuals, you know, that coaching, and really running with it till the point that you don't need it anymore. But for us, that's what, you know, really transitioning from the corporate to the franchise is like, how do we coach other people? We're not managing other people. We're coaching other people. And that was the big difference, which is very enjoyable, to be honest, because you're, you know, the carrot is not, you know, yours to give. It's, you know, people are driving themselves because they want to drive themselves. And that's very exciting as a franchisor. It's like, how do we make you grow because you want to grow for yourself?
Yeah, you don't have the, you know, they have their own businesses. You can't tell them what to do. Well, they have to follow the system by the letters of the contract. But through the coaching, you can influence their choices and give them and empower them to maximize the opportunity. I talk in my book about the three levels of growth. First, you have to learn the system. Then you have to get to the point of knowing it, internalizing it. And that takes a couple of years. Then you start to work on mastering it, which is another couple of years. So you're probably somewhere in between, Don, between knowing it and mastering it as you evolve. I think the other thing, Florence, is I'd like to understand what percentage of your franchisees are women, or are they all women?
So we have one man, St. John's, Newfoundland. And it's funny because he is the only franchisee we have that's a semi-absentee owner. Although our multi-unit owners now are semi-absentee. Like Dawn is very involved, but she's, you know, she's got a manager for every store. But he is the one that bought in with, you know, a bit of a different setting there. But there's only one, and we obviously attract women a lot more for this. I talk, and it's funny because when I do sales, when I get leads in, I see the desire of these women coming on these calls and why they come on the call. They want something for themselves. They want a new career opportunity. They're ready to move forward and take that next leap and take a little bit of risk. And it's different for men, I find. So I think that's why we're very attractive to a certain, you know, kind of population, which are, you know, women between 40 and 65 years old that are ready for that great career.
And self-controlled and remove the limitations and ceilings and governors that are often tied to corporate.
Yeah, and self-accomplishment that they might not have gone through corporate structures.
So as we start to wind down, I'd like to hear from both of you, what advice would you give for people who are approaching franchising for the first time? What kind of, hey, you really want to pay attention to blank? Don, back to you.
I would just say you really need to have a passion, I think, for this industry, and people in general. You're dealing with the clients, you're dealing with your staff. You have to love what you do. So that would be that's definitely, and my thing I always tell everybody is when you, I fully believe that I was so successful with my first location, Whippy, because I was there. I was so present. I was there. I was hungry. And I believe that's why I was so successful so quickly at Whippy. But then I look at Kitsilano and I opened Vancouver and I haven't really been here, and it's still on a great path. So I'll still say, I believe that you need to learn your business. You need to fully understand it. You need to work there. Also to have the respect of your staff, right? But having a passion for what you're doing is so important.
So I'm going to open that up a bit. One of the things we believe, people come in and they look at franchising. I love cooking, therefore I'm passionate about cooking. I want to have a restaurant. And sometimes that's that or other. I love golf. I want to have a golf store. I've always maintained the passion has to be for the work it takes to put the product or service in the customer's hands. You have to believe in the value conviction, but you have to love the work. And for you, you just said a couple of key things. You talk about leadership. We talked earlier on today about managing and how you have good managers. So you're on top of the metrics. So all those different elements, would you agree or disagree with that? So believe in the product or service, love the work it takes to put it in their hands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, you know, I talk to a lot of franchisees that are interested in the business, and some of them, they just, it looks pretty and they have no real interest. Like they've never even done any sort of research in it. They're just like, oh, Dawn looks like she's doing well. I wanna buy in. It's like, do you know anything about the business? Do you have, like, it's not just about, you know, Dawn looks like she's, you know, doing well. You have to love what you're doing in order to be successful. And that is the actual, you know, model that you're buying into and everything that comes with.
So understanding what people's passions are, looking back, like our advice to our clients is look backwards in your career. What is the type of work you're really good at and love to do? And what is the type of work that you don't like to do? Or what are your skill strengths and your skill gaps? Because if you get a business where the core elements, what it takes to run, are a skill gap, And the franchisor doesn't have systems or training, that's be more risk. Okay, Don, thank you for that. Florence, back to you. And same question.
So yeah, there's two very important elements here. One, you have to understand if you're an entrepreneur or if you're a potential franchise partner. And that's, you know, that's very different. And when we go through the franchise sales with the candidates, I always go through that very much in detail on their first call. Because you need to be happy going into a system. You need to be able to, master the system, like you're saying, which means trust. You need to trust that you're in good hands. And if you don't have that right off the bat, you should not enter into any system at all, because you're going to be feeling very frustrated. So that's one, you know, do you want to do your own thing, or are you okay following the system and getting into that and trusting that system? And the other thing is, you know, you have to do your due diligence when you get into a franchise system. Are you aligning on core values? Do you understand where this brand is going? Do you like who's leading this brand? We have a lot of culture call and value calls on, you know, our sales process, because we have to, you know, evaluate each other. They have to buy in. We have to buy into them. And I think it's, you know, especially for a newer brand that is growing, that has, you know, we don't know everything yet. So you have to understand that. And, you know, it's kind of growing together, like you were saying earlier, being better together and just, you know, working with each other, but you're still in a system. So you have to understand that. So I think that's very important, the values and the foundation of what you're buying into. And then, you know, listen, once you're in it, you have to, you know, participate. If you want to have a voice, you can. You have to participate. You have to follow leadership of the franchisor, and go and ask for it if they're not giving it to you, because they know better. They should know better. They're a good system. So just all that stuff together, you know, growing together in the same path.
Leveraging, coming back to the systems and leveraging the intellectual brain trust. If you don't know, ask. If it's not going right, or as well as you thought, ask and get that coaching. You said trust. You said right off the bat that you need trust. I'd like to put some brackets around it. I think what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but once you buy the franchise, you've got to have the trust there. While you're getting to know the franchise, that mutual evaluation, that's where trust is built. And it often takes, 8, 12 weeks, sometimes longer, of getting to know each other. It's mutual evaluation, and it's not, hey, somebody, a good franchisor doesn't sell franchises. For the audience, a good franchisor awards franchises to people who have earned that awarding. So you guys are, it's a business marriage for 5, 10 years or longer, that you want to make sure that all the key components are there.
Yeah. And
I like what you said, Florence, about aligning on the core values, understanding what those are. Okay, two last questions. What advice would you give to incoming Fuzz franchisees specifically? So Don, this is for you.
What advice would I give? Trust the process. That's one thing that I still to this day value about Jesse and Flo, is they're open to listening to you, and they're open to helping you understand why they came to a decision. And it always, to me, makes sense in the end. Like, I might be like, oh, like, I don't know why they just don't do it. And then in the end, I'm like, oh, that's why they didn't do it. So yeah, trusting the process. It can be, especially those, you know, first few months, first year even. It's scary for sure, but, you know, trusting that process. I've had people say to me before, oh, head office keeps saying sell memberships. I make more money when they don't buy a membership, so I don't care. And it's like, no, I'm 4 years in. Trust me, you want that membership. That's guaranteed revenue that's coming in. So you might make more money in that moment, but that's not, you want that recurring revenue. So yeah, if you're in it, you gotta trust the process.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question, and this will be for each of you. What does the future look like? Don?
Future for me is looking good and scary. Might be possibly purchasing another couple of stores.
That's exciting. So no cap on you. You continue to build that empire.
Apparently.
Okay. And Florence, from the franchisor perspective, what's the vision for growth as we progress 2023, 2024 and beyond?
So we're back to our 2019 vision before everything halted, but a big growth pattern for us. We're on the way of, opening three new franchise stores in the next 6 months. And that's not stopping. Most of our franchisees are multi-unit, and we only sell now multi-unit locations. So people come in with two right off the bat. So with the development schedule, obviously, but so that's quite a few locations opening up in the next couple of years. And then, we have plans about 100 locations in the next 5 years.
Is that all in Canada, or is it venturing into the US as well?
Right now, Canada, yeah. I mean, we were really looking at the US before COVID. We do think there's a huge opportunity in Canada. We love this country. We love the fact that there's so many, a lot of women, but a lot of people that are looking for opportunities for growth in all these different regions. So we're going to focus on that right now. And then we definitely have our eyes on the US for later.
Okay. And where would people get a hold of you if they're interested?
Well, they can send us an email at franchise@buzzwaxbar.com. That's the way to reach me directly.
Okay, thank you. I misspoke. There is one more question, with my favorite question I like to end all the podcasts with. Each of you, I'd like you to answer. What have I not asked you that you would ask you?
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
from the lens of our listeners, some are people thinking about franchising their business. Most are people thinking about getting into franchise ownership. What have I not asked you that you would ask you?
People always ask me when I do sales, how successful am I going to be? Like, how can you predict the fact that I'm going to be successful? And, it's such a hard question to answer because it really is about you. And that's what I always answer them is like, we have a system, which is us or any other franchisors out there. We have stores, you can tell it's working somehow. Doesn't mean it's going to work for you though. It's all about you and doing your due diligence, understanding where you're getting into. Do you like this? Do you love it? Like Don was saying, but also, are you going to work hard? And in what, way are you going to work hard? You don't have to work hard 100 hours a week. That's not necessarily working hard. But you have to believe and trust that you can do it and understand what you're getting into. But it will support you. We'll be there 100% of your way, all the way until you exit the system. But it's all you.
And one of the questions we get at Franet constantly is, how much money can I make? And I turn it around and say, you have to understand the work it takes in the business you're looking at. What is the work it takes to achieve at the level that your goals are at? For some people who want to get a lifestyle protection, $80,000 to $100,000 a year in income, it takes a certain level of growth and then a pretty consistent effort, but a scaled back effort. For Don, someone like you, it's like you achieve a goal, you set the next goal, then you set the next goal. So thank you, Florence. It's understanding the work it takes to achieve at the financial and lifestyle level you want. Don, what have I not asked you that you would ask you?
Yeah, kind of along the same lines, to be honest, like, is this kind of short term or long term for you? Multi-unit or not multi-unit? Like, for me, I haven't made a ton of money because I just keep reinvesting, because I want lots of stores. And then one day it will all be worth it and I can retire early. But it is a lot to do with how much you're willing to put into it. I don't think had I opened Whippy and continued napping all day, I don't think I would have been, successful. I was there. I was talking with the community. I was telling everybody about the store. And I remember when Flo and Jesse were like, not like go into every store in your plaza. And I was like, what? I don't want to do that. But that's literally what it's about. Like you got to put yourself out there. You have to put the work in to be successful. So yeah, long-term, short-term, I don't know if they're looking to make $1 million in their first year. I don't know.
If they find one, tell me, I'll buy it first. it's something you just said, you haven't made a lot of money. I think I'm hearing it differently. You have earned a good amount of income through the absolutely. Business. You're just not taking it out. You're reinvesting in growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if the money wasn't there, I wouldn't be able to.
You wouldn't buy more stores. Yeah.
But I don't have a yacht that I can move on yet.
Okay. Well, I'd love to stay talking because there's a bunch more we could talk about, but I think we are at a time. So Florence, Dawn, thank you for sharing your time and wisdom today. It's been a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen in Franchise Canada land, thank you for listening. Have a great week. That's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Franchise Canada Chats. Catch up on every episode of Franchise Canada Chats on SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio media. For more franchising resources, including how-to articles, expert advice, franchise success stories, and franchise opportunities, visit franchisecanada.online. Don't forget to subscribe to Franchise Canada e-news while you're there. You can also learn more about franchising at cfa.ca and connect with specific franchise opportunities at lookforafranchise.ca.